Coming up, we're going to talk to the folks from the American Dairy Association because I have my official American Dairy Association milkshake out here at the Indiana State Fair. Also today from 6 until 8 at the Julia Carson Government Center, it's going to be that community meeting to explain the new expungement law, the new second chance law. So come on out. It is today at the Julia Carson Government Center. That's at Fall Creek in Delaware from 6 to 8. And we'll talk, what I'm about to tell you, we'll talk more about on the show tomorrow. But we have breaking news, and this is not going to go over well with school reformers and education reformers in Indiana, but the New York Times is breaking a story today that the state of New York aligned their standardized test to match the new Common Core, and kids in New York cratered on the new tests. According to the New York Times, in New York City, only 26% of students through the 3rd through 8th grade passed English, and only 30% passed math. And that's on the new Common Core. In the state, this is the whole state of New York, 31% of the students passed reading and math. Last year, 55% passed reading and 65% math. Oh, the folks that don't like Common Core are going to suddenly say, go read the New York Times, which will be a surprise because many of them don't read the New York Times. But anyway, we'll talk about that mess tomorrow. But I'm here with the Pride of Hallville. He's one of the many vendors here at the Indiana State Fair, including minority-owned vendors. Everybody knows Judge Smith of Judge's Barbecue. Welcome.
Thank you.
How's biz out here at the fair?
It's been very good. First day, okay. Mm-hmm. Weekend, very strong. Monday, but yesterday was a record.
So you say have more than $2 Tuesdays.
I don't know. I don't know if I could stand it. It was nonstop the whole time.
How much of an impact on your business in terms of preparing to handle 17 days of doing business off-site do you have to do to prepare for this?
I started preparing about 3 weeks out, mm-hmm. you know, doing the pulled pork and ribs and storing them in freezers and other things so that when I came out here, when I cook on site, I'd have something to serve. And then, like right now, I'm okay because I'm cooking on site as well, right. So I'm able to keep up.
Sometimes when people come out of the state fair and they see so many vendors, a lot of them selling the same thing, they worry about, how does anybody make any money with all that? I mean, this is pure capitalism at its best out here at a state fair.
Well, you just create something that's a little different, mm-hmm. and hopefully you draw the number of people that you know would cause you to be profitable. I can't serve everybody out here, but I want to serve my part.
Hmm. So do you do anything? Is the menu out here at the fair different than the menu if we come over to Michigan Street in beautiful Hallville, USA?
Well, I added something this year. I thought it would be fitting for the state fair. Barbecue smoked bologna.
Wait. Barbecue smoked bologna.
Yes.
Now, that's different.
That's different.
Is it winning?
It's slowly, but surely, people are getting it, and they like it.
So now, how many years have you been out here at the fair?
This is year three.
They gotten better. What was the biggest transition when you got to come out here?
My first biggest transition was getting over the fear of being open like an event for 17 days. Mm-hmm. I hadn't done it, but we just said I'm military, and our approach is get it done, do whatever it takes.
Would that be the impediment for other minority vendors to think about this and they say, wait a minute, this is not like going to Expo for 3 days. This is not like doing something at Lucas Oil Stadium for a Colts game. There's only 8 or 9, 10 Colts games. This is 17 days straight in a row.
This is a marathon,
mm-hmm.
and you got to train for it. And we have had 2 years to train, and this year we feel like we are in much better shape than we were 2 years ago, and I think that we're only going to get better.
Do you staff up for that, and if so, how many people?
Well, actually, we are down, but I have relatives that are in the restaurant business, and uh-huh. this is a highlight for them. It's kind of a semi-vacation.
So this is like a family thing.
It's a family thing.
Like your
thing
family reunion. Judge's family reunion at the Indiana State Fair.
Almost.
All right. Almost. So now where are you located? Because here we are at the gazebo, which is kind of in the center. If I look one way, I see the grandstand, and I see the Pepsi Coliseum, and I see the Fall Creek Gate. If I look another way, I see the main 38th Street Gate. If I look another way, I'm running right into the doggone Midway and the Monon Trail. Where are you, so everybody that's listening can figure out when they come to the fair, hang with Judge? Where are y'all at?
If you use the Midway as a reference point, you exit the Midway, take a left.
Exit the Midway going towards 38th Street?
No, the other direction.
Oh, exit the Midway going toward 42nd Street.
Toward 42nd Street.
Turn left.
The bridge.
Uh-huh.
And I put it like this. I'm right across from the free stage.
Oh, you can't miss that. You're right across from the free stage. That's really the free stage this year, since there's not entertainment in the Pepsi Coliseum. There's not entertainment in the grandstand. The free stage is where it's going on.
Exactly.
You lucked up this year.
Well, the last 2 years, too.
The last 2 years. You don't want to say, keep the entertainment at the free stage.
I'm with that.
How many other African-American vendors are out there? I know you're not the only one.
Well, the only one that I have seen and know
is
Alfonso, his daughter. It is called Gobble Gobble. They serve the turkey legs.
Uh-oh.
And I haven't seen anyone else on that stretch.
Okay.
And I'm not sure who's at this end.
So we know we got Judge's Barbecue and we got the turkey legs.
Gobble Gobble.
That's all we need.
Legs.
We don't need anything else. And for people that don't know your regular place, where's it located?
It's located 2104 West Michigan Street, just across the White River from IUPUI. And if you've been to the Hallville Library, it's right across the street.
All right. Appreciate it. Now, you know who Jonathan Butler is. Great entertainer, right? You've heard of him. You've heard the name.
Yes.
Okay. Well, he's going to be live at the Madam Walker this Friday. It's part of the return of Faithful Fridays on AM 1310, The Light, WTLC. And so he's going to be performing for free. Now, the only catch is you got to have a ticket. And the only place you get a ticket is from AM 1310, The Light. So in honor of Brother Judge being here, Judge and I, you get to be Judge and I's guest. Oh, I've just fractured English right there. Judge and I's guest to see Jonathan Butler this Friday, 7 o'clock. It'll be the eighth caller. The eighth caller at 239-1310. Right now, the eighth caller will get four tickets. That's a ticket for you and three people that you either know, don't know, or will really want to try to impress. Right now, call 239-1310, 239-1310, be the eighth caller, and you get to go see, courtesy of me, and you can say Judge helped, Jonathan Butler this Friday, the return of Faithful Fridays right here on AM 1310, The Light. You like that?
I like that.
Judge Smith with Judge Barbecue on Michigan Street and at the fair. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
When we come back, the dairy farmers of Indiana are in the house. We'll talk to them. See, it was their year. Now it's the year of popcorn. All that and more. It's Afternoons with Amos live at the fair. All right, welcome back to your Indiana State Fair, 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. There's all kind of hot spots where people like to hang out at the Indiana State Fair, the elephant ear places, the fried Snickers, baked Snickers, or whatever kind of Snickers they got out here, the Midway, the animal competitions, and also the dairy bar, the hottest bar, in fact, the only bar at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, since this is an alcohol-free and smoke-free facility, is the dairy bar, and that is the American Dairy Association, Indiana's dairy farmers. In the house, Jenny Purcell. Jenny brought me my official chocolate shake
from
the Indiana State Fair. This is a big, the dairy bar is the only bar in this facility.
It is. A lot of people they call it the dairy barn, but it is the dairy bar because we say you belly up to a bar, and we don't want people to confuse the livestock, that those are the barns. And it's been going strong. 1941 was when the first dairy bar, it was a tent, and they just served milk. And today we still serve milk for 50 cents. And if you have a toddler with a sippy cup or a bottle, we will fill that up for free.
With the emphasis on health,
Yes.
With what First Lady Michelle Obama has been doing the last several years, with the starting the decline of people consuming carbonated beverages, consuming alcoholic beverages like beer, is milk seeing a renaissance?
Well, we have, you know, I think the flavored milk, you hear a lot of controversy about that. And so we have schools talking about, you know, the concern, or maybe parents just, you know, parents are worried about the health of their children. And what they see in schools, if people do take out flavored milk, which, again, is only 30 calories more than regular milk, it has the same nine essential.
Why don't people like chocolate milk?
Well, I think they're concerned it has that extra flavor.
Okay.
So kids drink it because it's, in my opinion, it's not considered nutrition unless they consume it. So if it doesn't taste good to them, then they're not going to get the calcium they need.
Right.
So it's that extra sugar, which, again, helps, I guess, the nutrition go down. And, and they're seeing that kids are not drinking the white milk if you take out the flavored milk. The thought was maybe they will just drink the white milk. It doesn't happen. So I really encourage everyone to be advocates for flavored milk because that's where kids are getting their calcium.
So really, it's flavored milk is the hip thing. Just as flavored water seems to be the hip thing in
water. Well, and then you're hearing a lot about the chocolate milk after exercise.
Right.
It just happens to be the right carb to protein ratio, and it has electrolytes and all that good stuff that you need.
Steven on our staff thinks he's young. But that's part of what dairy is trying to do, is to make milk drinking hip among younger people.
Well, and because you don't have to be just a child, and once after you're in middle school, you can still continue to drink milk. It's still good for you, and you still need those three servings of dairy a day, so why not get it in low-fat milk?
See the things we're learning. Dairy business good here in Indiana this year?
Very good. We have 1,200 dairy farmers in the state of Indiana, and when you think of that, that's a lot of dairy farms. You probably have one close to you in driving distance, and it brings about $800 million to the state's economy, and that's about 8,000 jobs. So,
And we, in terms of dairy states, if we look at Wisconsin as being number one or close to number one, where is Indiana?
14th.
We're 14th, so we're kind of in the middle.
But we're second in ice cream production.
Why is it we're second in ice? We just like ice cream.
Well, we're very sweet, the Hoosier State is. So, Edie's, we have Edie's up there in Fort Wayne. I think that helps out a lot. So, we'll take it. And California, we're second to California. But so, we need
we're
to get
second to California
so
in ice cream.
I challenge all the Hoosiers out there to start eating ice cream so we can be number one.
in terms of what the involvement in the state fair does for dairy farmers, particularly the individual dairy farmers. They know this is critical, so Hoosiers understand how important their livelihood, their industry is.
I think dairy farmers, they love the state fair because it's that one time, if you haven't been to a dairy farm, you have the cattle barn, you have to where you can watch a live milking take place, and you can really see how milk gets from the cow to your table. So there's the dairy farmers move in this Friday. So there will be dairy farmers to ask questions. Mm. We've provided the buttons to say, I'm a dairy farmer, ask me. So if you have concerns, you have questions about what a dairy farmer does, go up and
ask
them.
What kind of questions do people ask dairy farmers?
Well,
other than where's the milk come from?
Where the milk, they want to know how the animals are taken care of. They want to know that how they're fed. So a lot of they're surprised to know that there's a nutritionist that comes and checks out the food. I know I'm a dietitian, but I don't have my own dietitian. So the cows, dairy cows, actually have their own dietitian. They have, you know, whether it's a vet come and check up on them.
So it's gourmet grain that cows have to eat?
They call it a ration. So they have to make sure they have the right mix of carbohydrates and proteins and all of the nutrition they need in order to be healthy, because a healthy cow will produce great milk. So that it's only in the dairy farmer's best interest to take care of the cow, because they will produce more milk.
One of the traditions of our Indiana dairy farmers is the keeper of the milk at the Indianapolis 500. Who gets to pick which farmer delivers that? You pull hats into the contest?
It's the Milk Promotion Board, and that's who, it's the dairy farmers I work for. They are elected by their peers, so the dairy farmers select a dairy farmer. And we have two, so we have the rookie milkman, or a dairy farmer that, you know, follows along in the milkman spot. And this year it was Dwayne Hill. He is a dairy farmer in Fountain City. He milks 60 cows. And
That's considered a small farm?
Yeah. Our average farm size is 129 cows.
So this is a small farm.
Yes,
a small farm. Okay.
And, you know, he teared up. All that hard work he puts in every day. You have to milk every day. And to give that honor of the milk he produces to that winning driver, it's quite an honor for these dairy farmers.
Particularly since the driver was Tony Kanaan,
yes,
who had never won, and that had to be doubly emotional for him.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it.
I understand that the drivers are surveyed, so you know, depending on who the winner is, if they're lactose intolerant or if they like skim or flavored milk.
That's right. Well, we haven't put that on the option yet.
Oh, that's right, but it still has to be...
It has to be white.
Okay.
As of now, we don't know what the future holds, but it's skim, 2% or whole, and then we also have option, it doesn't matter, just give me the milk pretty much. You know, hey, I'll be happy to drink any milk you want. And we pull them, so we have the milk waiting, and we watch for the race car driver. So Tony, we know that he had 2% milk, so we had it ready for him.
And I understand, I know at one point, a lot of years ago, there were a couple of drivers that kind of like, yeah, this isn't. But I think the drivers now get the importance of it. It's part of the pageantry. It's part of the history and the tradition of the 500.
I think they do. They respect that tradition. Mm-hmm. So, again, whether they really embrace the milk, which we always hope they do, or drink it, we always say, and the race says, they haven't won the Indy 500 until they drink that bottle of milk at the end of the race.
And it's amazing how y'all keep it cool.
Well,
and with old-fashioned cooler with the ice
we
and everything.
We do. It's just ice down. The dairy farmers, that's their job. They take it very seriously because they're all about cold milk and quality milk. So they keep it with them overnight on ice,
right,
and they guard it, kind of like lock and key throughout the day.
All right. And the dairy bar, the only bar that is at the Indiana State Fair, is located between the administration building and the grandstand on the north side of the main drag here at the fair, and it's open whenever the fair. They've got milkshakes. They've got ice cream. They've got the ice cream sickle things and all kind of stuff.
Yes,
everything.
Do.
All from our dairy farmers, right?
That's right. Grilled cheese is our new grilled cheese this year, is the Blue Moo.
Wait, blue grilled cheese?
Blue cheese with...
Blue cheese.
With two American cheese slices and on sourdough. And it's been very popular.
Is this the official cheese sandwich of the Colts, blue cheese?
You know, I haven't thought about that. That's a good marketing.
Somebody,
I should have talked to Amos before I did
this. Call Jimmy Irsay. He'll probably eat it or get Luck to eat it or oh, I can see Reggie Wayne eating blue cheese sandwich. Jenny Purcell with our Indiana Dairy Farmers, the American Dairy Association. Always good to see you. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a break. We'll come back. There's some folks here with shirts on that says, "His voice through us." And when they say his voice, they're talking about, cause, hey, this is the light. We know who his is. And they'll come and tell us because they're performing later today at our Indiana State Fair. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. All right, welcome back. We're live at the Indiana State Fair. Now, the state fairgrounds is state property. It's government property. The Indiana State Fair is a quasi-governmental operation. But just because we're on secular property and just because government is somehow involved, God has always been a part of the Indiana State Fair. Every Sunday, there's a church service here at the fair. There's at the gospel night on the soul side that is always on the last day of the fair. And evidently, we got some singers in the house. The group is called His Voice Through Us. And when they say his, you know the his we're talking about. So I got Ray Seaman and Ray's better half, Janet, along with Eric Shaw. Guys, welcome. They're going to be performing at 3 o'clock, so I can't talk to them long because they got to get over and limber up their voices. And whatever, you guys are a trio?
We're a trio, been in existence since about 1995. And we travel all over the place singing for our Lord Jesus Christ.
How did you all get started? Obviously, this is a music ministry. How were you called to it?
We were called back in, what was it, about 2003, when our pastor preached a series of sermons on the prayer of Jabez. And his first sermon was, "Pick me, pick me." And so we kind of prayed about that and said, "Pick us, Lord. If you got something for us out there, open the door and we'll go through it." And he has opened all the doors for us, and that's where we're going.
You guys are Indiana homebred. Where are y'all from in Indiana?
Noblesville.
So they need some ministry up in Noblesville.
We're doing the best we can. And he's from Carmel, so he needs
more. Oh, you need a little bit more up in Carmel.
I understand.
When you're at a location like this, at a state fair, where you're not only performing to believers, you're performing to folks that maybe are doubters, maybe they aren't even believers at all, does that make the music ministry all the more critical?
Oh, absolutely. Most of the people that you'll run into around a venue like this are a lot of those that are only getting access to the news in the afternoon that can sometimes be so brutal and so disappointing. And we have the opportunity through our music to sing about good news. So therefore, the way that we present it to these people is very, very important. And a lot of times it's with a smile, not necessarily maybe what we say, but what they see us do and how they see us act. That's very important.
You guys, is it fair to say you're more a traditional trio in terms of traditional gospel and inspiration? And the reason I say that is we just did at AM 1310 The Light our praise on the canal, where there were all different types of styles of African-American gospel and inspirational music, not just the traditional styles, but some of this dance that looked like some jitterbug stuff and the rap stuff. And I know in white, and I mean no disrespect, gospel music, there's also this multiplicity of genres. How do you think that today in gospel and inspirational music, all of these different styles telling the good news, how critical is that, you know, to telling his voice through us?
I think it's very critical. I think all the music is needed today. You know, if it reaches whoever, you know, it needs to be done. And that's what we're all about. We're members of the Indiana Gospel Music Association, which is here, and we have about 16 different groups performing yesterday and today. This is our final day. And we have all different styles within the last 2 days. So it's very important to us.
Now, I'm going to help you guys out. I'm going to move over here. I'm going to help you all out. It'll be like your warm-up for when you perform at 3 o'clock. Give the listeners a little bit of, I'm going to calm these folks down. Shh. The Lord's getting ready to perform over here now. There you go. You know, give us a sample of what people will hear and what his voice through us is all about.
Okay, ready? Hang down your head, oh, sinner. Hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, oh, sinner. Poor boy, you're bound to die. You may be on the mountain, you may be on the sea. If Jesus comes tomorrow, you better be on your knees and praying. Hang down your head, oh sinner. Hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, oh sinner. A poor boy, you're bound to die. A poor boy, you're bound to die.
They are his voice through us. And it doesn't matter the color of your skin pigmentation, because God's music and God's word transcends it all. It's an honor and a privilege to meet you guys.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
Well, I see that's what our Indiana State Fair is all about, meeting new people, learning from each other, learning what brings Hoosiers together rather than what separates Hoosiers apart. God bless you guys. It was a pleasure meeting you. Ray and Janet Seaman and Eric Shaw, they are his voice through us, and they're part of the ones. And are you guys going to be performing 3 o'clock and what other time today?
Just 3 o'clock till about 3:30.
Y'all better hurry up and get here. Y'all better get your you-know-what and come on down here. It's an honor and pleasure to meet you guys.
There's other groups that will be performing till 6 o'clock tonight.
Thank you, guys. 239-1310, 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more live from your Indiana State Fair after these. And welcome back on the program tomorrow. We will tell you about an effort that was started by the mayors of Philadelphia and New Orleans, working in conjunction with the National League of Cities. It is an effort to encourage cities and provide them with help and expertise to help reduce the level of violence by African-American males. It's called Cities United. We'll tell you about the program on our show tomorrow. Also tomorrow, there is a bus tour that's going to be coming in to highlight the problem of illegal guns in the country. It's being sponsored by the Mayors Against Illegal Guns. That bus tour is going to be in Indianapolis on Friday. We'll preview it on the program on tomorrow. All that and a lot more. 239-1310, 239-1310. We are live from your Indiana State Fair. And one of the new highlights of the State Fair, we mentioned it in our first hour when we talked with Cindy Hoy, the executive director of the fair, is the Glass Barn, a real barn made out of glass. And somehow or another, the soybean growers, I'm getting ready to find out, what do soybeans have to do with glass and a glass barn? Megan Kuhn with the Indiana Soybean Alliance is in the house. Megan, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
What is the glass barn? Sounds like a French movie or something. What's the glass barn?
Well, it's just a new building, and yeah. And we wanted to have a name that invoked what we wanted people to come away with when they came into the barn, and we really wanted to be able to provide the fairgoer both during the fair and then also the folks who visit the fair during field trips and that sort of thing outside of the fair with a clear look at how we farm today and the farm families that do it. So while it's not actually a barn, we just think it's a nice name for what we're trying to do there.
So this is a place where fairgoers can walk in and really see what is agriculture in the second decade of the 21st century.
Exactly, because, the North Side has the Great Pioneer Village that really tells the story of what we did 100 years ago. And what we wanted to do is show that the same families that did it 100 years ago are still on the farm. They're just using different technologies and different ways to raise their livestock and their crops.
How important is technology, internet, cell phones, the kinds of modern devices you have in your cars and trucks are in those the machinery that harvests soybeans and other stuff. How important is technology today?
Oh, it's invaluable. It improves the efficiency. It allows us to use way less gas, to drive our tractors across the field. It allows us to use less inputs. The GPS technology that you use in your car to help you get from place to place, we're actually using it to map our fields to know exactly what we put on there from year to year, and so we can tell what's in our fields, and if
so
they're not producing.
So it's like a Google map for farmers where they can see, okay, here's where the soybeans are, here's where the corn is, here's where there's nothing because we're recycling the land so it'll be better for the next year, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we can go in and they plant their seed so they know exactly how much they planted, and they mark the field with the GPS, and they can watch and they can go back over that field when they spray and know exactly what seeds are there and what's needed. They just track the field from when they planted it all the way to harvest, so they can go back in, and after harvest they can see their yield and they can see, well, this part of the field was less. You produce less. Well, why is that? Maybe they can go out and soil sample and do all that. So technology, and then just for the weather alone, to be able to tell if it's going to rain or if it's going to that affects the field.
The fact that weather forecasts today are so targeted, they're far more accurate than the farmer. If I could sit here at the fairgrounds and look at the radar from the Weather Channel here at the fairgrounds, that means a farmer in Randolph County can sit in his combine or his tractor and see what the weather is getting ready to be coming toward his farm. How important is that to make it more productive so you really know the rain is an hour away, so I got time to do what I got to do.
That's exactly it. They know how much time they have in the field. They know if it's spraying season and they're trying to control the weeds. If they see a storm coming, they're not going to get in the field, and that sort of thing. So it's really.
Go ahead. See, this is technology, and the technology occasionally. Go ahead. Continue. Oh.
So it's invaluable for those farmers to be able to kind of plot their day and be able to get in the field when they need to and get out when they can.
What kind, we're talking with Megan Kuhn of the Indiana Soybean Alliance. They're hooked up with the glass barn out here. What's been the reaction of fairgoers who have come by the glass barn?
They've really taken away some good. They've enjoyed it. They've had fun. We had a lot of interactives. They all come away with I think, a better appreciation of really the family farm. I think that's the one thing that they really are surprised at is that 96% of our farms are still family owned. So even though we're getting bigger, it may not look exactly like those farms did 100 years ago, that they're still the same families are on that land today.
This may be a dumb question. You know, when people are driving on the interstate and they're driving past farm fields, they know where corn is being planted because they see the tall stalks and they know, okay, that's corn. They know if it's livestock, they can see cows grazing, they can see horses grazing, they might see sheep or pigs. How do you know where the soybean fields are? Because soybeans are a huge part of Indiana's agricultural economy. Is it when you see, like, leaves real close to the ground, that's soybeans?
Early in the season, you'll see them, and there'll be just a few leaves coming out. But, like, right now, you should see big fluffy plants with, like, three leaves to a stem and those bushy plants. Basically, if it's not corn in the field and it's a bunch of leaves spread across the field, it's probably soybeans because that is our second largest crop.
And this is soybeans, what I think people listening don't realize, because you don't go in the store and instantly see package of soybeans. You know, you don't, there is not Kellogg soybeans, but soybeans are so integrated in so much today. There is milk from soybeans. As soybeans become what Booker T. Washington talked about when he looked at all the many uses of the peanut back at Tuskegee Institute, soybeans is like his dream, only it wasn't peanuts, it's soybeans.
Exactly right, and a lot of those same people, Booker T. Washington, George Carver, Washington, they all actually experimented with soybeans, and soybeans is great. And you probably don't know, but if you pick up a bottle of vegetable oil in your grocery store, it's soybean oil. So soybeans are in a lot of the things, not just your tofu and your soybean milk and that sort of thing, but the soybean oil itself is a base to a lot of products, salad dressings, Cool Whip. A lot of things you'll see that soybean oil, which is really important. And then there's the whole industrial new uses of candles and crayons. Anything really that could be made with petroleum can be substituted with soybean oil. So there really is a lot of possibilities.
Has soybeans become the base of American agriculture? In other words, it is the lead crop, or is that oversimplifying soybeans?
Well, I think corn's probably your number one, but soybean is a very close second. It's a very high value crop, it basically corn, soybeans, they rotate. So same farmers grow corn, soybeans, so they compete kind of one and two for those largest crops.
So now, of the 50 states, where do our soybean farmers rank? Are we up there close to number one?
Yeah, there's about 33 states that actually grow soybeans, and we're fourth.
We're fourth. Wait a minute. Who's ahead? Who we got to knock off? Who's ahead of us?
Well, it is Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota. And we're neck and neck usually with Nebraska.
We done beat Nebraska not only in – that's maybe the only thing right now we're beating Nebraska in.
We can't beat them in football usually, but we can in soybeans. So we beat them this past year after we actually had a fairly good crop, even though we had a pretty bad weather year.
And we're not, and when I think of those, I know Iowa, we have bigger land area than Iowa, but I think Minnesota has bigger land area, and Illinois, if you take Chicago out, we may be about even in land area. So that's not bad, not being fourth.
That isn't bad, you know, because Iowa, they're so much more agriculture than we are. You know, we have way more people than they do. So to be able to produce what we do on the land we do is quite phenomenal.
All right, so now in the fairgrounds, the glass barn is where?
It's on the north side.
On the 42nd Street side.
42nd Street, right inside of Gate 12. And right beside Pioneer Village and on the other side of Farm Bureau. So you can't miss it. It's a brand-new structure, beautiful roof line. Everyone should come out and visit us.
Is that also deliberate so that fairgoers go and see what agriculture was in the 19th century, and then they walk a little bit and they see what it is in the 21st?
Yeah, we love the location because that's exactly what we want to do. We want to tell a complete story up on the north side. And it really it fits really well with some of the other barns, with Normandy Barn and the Mac Reynolds, the John Deere barn. So it fits really well up there, and we're really excited.
And I know this is only the sixth day of the fair. As people have come, as your soybean farmers have come through, what are they thinking?
We've heard really only compliments. They really they like the exhibit. What we've done is we feature farm families throughout, so they really like that they're represented, and they love.
How are the farm families represented?
We feature three of them throughout the farm, and then videos and photos and that sort of thing. But then we also have a cool photo slideshow where farmers from across the state just send in their pictures, and so we roll through and we say that we tell their name and where they're from and show their family. So really, it's because it's their barn too, because it's their dollars that build it, and we wanted to make sure everyone felt ownership in it.
Did you find any of the farmers in Marion County to stick in the barn?
You know, we don't have a Marion County. We have Hancock and we have Johnson County. So we have very close to Marion County, but no Marion County farmers this year.
Well, see, that might encourage somebody to start farming soybeans on a vacant lot in their neighborhood. Maybe they could be out there next year. You never know.
That's right. Or, you know, edamame's a great edible soybean that grows great in your garden.
What's that called? What kind of bean?
Okay, edamame.
What edamame? What is an edamame soybean?
It is a different variety of the soybeans that we usually grow, and it's a fresh green one. You find it in your salad bars and in your frozen food sections. Great source of protein.
See the things you learn at your Indiana State Fair. Megan Kuhn with the Indiana Soybean Alliance. They are the sponsors this year of the newest permanent exhibit out here at the Indiana State Fair, the Glass Barn, showing Indiana farmers and Indiana farming as it is today in the 21st century, the importance of technology and all of that. Megan, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thanks, Amos. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right, we will. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. On the program Friday. Oh, you got to be here Friday. Not only will my Friday friend be here, but the folks from the Indiana Department of Insurance will be here in our first hour on Friday. They believe that when the Affordable Care Act takes effect, that insurance rates under what is called the insurance exchange, that's the insurance available for people that don't have health insurance either through Medicaid or either through their employer, would cost 75 to 77% more than what it costs today. I don't know how they figured that out, what logarithm or algorithm or Tony Bennett math they used to figure that out. But they'll be here in our 1 o'clock hour on Friday, so y'all really need to be here for that. Also on the program tomorrow, we will follow up on what we told you about a few minutes ago, and this is going to reverberate not only across the country, but this will also reverberate here in the state of Indiana. The state of New York is one of the states that is adopting this Common Core, standards. And when you adopt Common Core standards, you're supposed to align your state achievement tests to fit Common Core. So this past school year, they aligned the standards of the state of New York to Common Core, and they aligned the tests that they give 3rd through 8th graders in the state of New York to the new standards. And guess what? Most 3rd through 8th graders in the state of New York flunked the test. In New York City, 26% of the students, only 26% passed the state exams in English. Only 30% passed the state exams in the new Common Core in math. And New York City was one of those places that did well. For example, in Rochester, New York, according to the New York Times, only 5% of the kids passed reading and math in the test under the new Common Core. Why do I think the people that oppose Common Core in Indiana are going to take that to the bank? What good is adopting a new standard if all of a sudden you give kids a test and then every school in the state becomes an F school? What good is what good is having letter grades if every school has an F? That's embarrassing. We'll talk about that at more tomorrow. We want to thank Andy Klotz and the PR staff, particularly the intern from Butler, who ended up here doing all the work while all the big people sat in the air-conditioned office. We thank you. Good luck to you. At Butler's, we want to thank Brother Stephen Jackson for kind of, you know, helping us out, making sure everything works. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. Oh, you got to come out here and enjoy. There's kids that aren't yet in school. Amen. What school you go to? Newark. That's right. Pike doesn't start till
tomorrow.
So you're spending your last day of freedom at the fair. Yes. Now y'all got. Are y'all going to get good grades this coming school year?
Yes. We will, and I will try because.
Because you're going to do that.
Yeah. All right, that's a good way to end the show. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. Come on out here and enjoy your Indiana State Fair. We'll see you tomorrow live at 1.